Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 412, Boffing Boffins.
Hi, I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And Shiva is off seeing a musical tonight.
Yeah, the Book of Mormon.
Yes.
It was on the tip of my brain.
So she's out there getting cultured, and we're here being uncultured swine.
That's right.
We are full of Whataburger, and now we're here to podcast in your ears. It has been another exciting week here in North Texas. I did exciting things like get my car repaired and do paperwork. It was not a very exciting week. I did have a very pleasant day helping my parents out, though. Set my dad up watching the most recent Star Wars film on the projector and ran the rest of the errands with my mom. So he got to chill with Adam, and I helped my mom go buy jewelry supplies. So
you came home and he was cackling about he loved that this movie was triggering the conservatives.
He did really like it. He really enjoyed Last Jedi. So he was glad that he had a good alternative to riding around in the car with us, waiting for us in the car going, are they done yet? Oh, God.
Yeah.
And Adam was not alone.
That's a win-win.
Yes.
Totally. Yeah.
He had a little dog to pet and got to see a movie.
Yay.
And we had no time restraints on us. So it worked out.
Cool. I haven't had much of a week, I guess. Oh, yeah. I was sick early in the week. I called into work, even though I was working from home, which is how in pain I was.
Yeah.
It was really unpleasant. So I stayed in bed as much as possible for like 3 days to basically get over it. I stayed in bed so long that the pressure on my back from laying down so much started to make my back start hurting like it used to.
Fun.
So then I was like, oh, I have this stomach issue and my old back pain is coming back, so now I am having trouble getting to sleep. Yay!
The joys of getting old, kids.
I'm better now, so yay. Let's hope that doesn't happen again.
Us sitting down, you know, the Terminator movies were just too cheesy.
Yeah. Right. Severe lactose reaction because of the cheesy movies.
The cheesiness of the second Terminator film.
So just update on Saverin's cultural hole. It is starting to shrink. We've now watched both the first two Alien movies and both the first two Terminator movies. We did not end up recording a commentary the first time because we did it just really sort of randomly. It was stupid late. And the second time because the laptop needed surgery on the power cord.
So an actual piece of metal broke off inside.
Oh.
That holds the power plug itself in place. So you can't fully plug in the laptop.
Because it just keeps pushing it further away.
Yeah. Right. So we've ordered a replacement backplate. And for the time being, we have the SuperDock. So
we have a way to
charge it, yeah. But it was just like, God damn it, just one more random thing broken. Mm-hmm. But I have seen both the Terminator films, 1 and 2. They're vastly different films. Like watching them back to back gave me a bit of whiplash because one is a hardcore action flick with an unstoppable killing machine. And the second one is kind of like a animated babysitter film.
Wow, that's kind of a harsh critique.
I like them. I like the films, but like the Terminator Arnie in the second film, like once he gets with John Connor,
I'm the T-800C. The C is for cuddly.
He's like the kid's pet.
Yeah.
He's his protector. And so like the body count in the film is like 5.
Yeah.
Versus the first film's 51 or so.
Right. And I remember, like, the reviews at the time, like, love T2 and said it was, like, surprisingly touching. Like, they really didn't expect, like, a Terminator film to have, like, emotional depth. in it.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, there's some emotion in the first movie. I mean, you know, they fall in love and then he gets killed. But
it was still an action film.
It's very much an action film of its time and a Schwarzenegger action film of its time. I mean, it's one of the few where he's the villain, actually. Which I seem to recall reading an interview years ago, not interviewing him, but just kind of discussing him in general. It was talking about how at the time it was a real risk for him to play the villain because his career was like just heating up at that point. He was up and coming. Like the only thing he'd done really of note at that point was the Conan films, in which he plays the hero. And like you're on the verge of like superstardom, but then if you play a villain, there is like some concern is like, oh, this might like hurt you becoming like an action hero kind of actor.
Because you played a villain.
Clearly, in retrospect, that didn't happen, but it was like one of the only times in his career where he played a villain in an action movie. And like it was like a legit concern his agents had at the time. It's kind of interesting.
He certainly had lots of movies after that, though.
It totally helped his career because, like, after that, you get like Commando, Predator,
True Lies,
Running Man, and then True Lies is you're getting up into the 90s, Total Recall in 90.
Then, like, of course, he had like what Jingle All the Way or something like that, where he was like
Last Action Hero did well. Jingle All the Way was a comedy, Twins was a comedy,
like The Sixth Day was a sci-fi film.
I actually really enjoyed that one. Like it was one that was like it really seemed to fly under the radar. I think it was not a big hit.
Yeah.
But have you seen it?
No.
Sixth Day?
I just am aware of it because it had a kind of goofy looking thing where it's like face, but he's got like the eye scanner thingies on.
Right. Yeah, it's like it's a clone movie.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good. I really enjoyed that one. I'm not sure how it holds up now. Maybe we should rewatch it. Anyway, enough of the Arnold Schwarzenegger career retrospective.
I'm filling those cultural holes like a fox.
Well, for him, the next thing I'm looking forward to is actually the sixth Terminator movie, which is going to be written and directed by James Cameron again. It's going to star Schwarzenegger, and Linda Hamilton is coming back for the first time since Terminator 2.
Yeah, and he's Sarah like, Connor. This is now the Terminator 3.
Yeah.
We're going to decanonize the other two.
He's officially saying that they happened to different timelines, meaning, you know, as far as he's concerned, they don't count. Which, I mean, when you have a movie series that's based on entirely on going back in time and changing how shit rolls, multiple timelines and alternate universes is totally a realistic, hand-wavy explanation for, hey, 3, 4, and 5 in a TV series? Yeah, didn't matter. Not going to talk about them. Something I've been pointing out to Savern on this little odyssey is the something that a lot of directors do, particularly if they write and direct their own films, is they will end up with a core group of actors that they keep going back to and recasting in all of their different projects. One that that's really obvious for people in my generation is Kevin Smith. You'll keep seeing the same people popping up over and over. And the thing that Aliens and both the Terminator, first two Terminator films have in common is James Cameron was writing, directing. So, you know, Lance Henriksen plays background cop in the first Terminator movie, and he plays Bishop in Aliens. And there was another person that I noticed so the actor Michael Biehn is the guy that plays Corporal Hicks in Aliens, the space marine, the one that survives to the end with Ripley. That's Kyle Reese. That's the same actor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he plays a big role in both of those films. The other one, the actor that I can think of, at least off the top of my head, that's in both of those series is Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
He plays the, we're in some real pretty shit now, man. What are we going to do?
Game over, man.
Yeah. Which is his most well-known role, probably. and then in the first Terminator movie, he's one of the three punk guys that Arnie gets kills. That gets smeared pretty fucking quickly. Yeah. Unrelated to James Cameron, one of his early roles, have you ever seen Weird Science?
No.
Oh, fuck me. Okay, well, for those that have, he's the asshole older brother of one of the main characters. It was a total douchebag. That's another movie you should... That, it does not get any more fucking 80s than Weird Science.
Was that one of those computers are magical kind of things?
Yes. They make a woman.
Cool.
It's dumb and it doesn't make any sense, but it's awesome. It's got a great soundtrack.
Maybe it's like $5 on iTunes. We'll have to give it a look.
If it's not, I'm sure I have the DVD.
Okay.
Maybe. Or maybe I never bothered buying it because it was rerun fucking every 5 minutes for like every year of my childhood. So anyway, that's it on MovieCast. We'll catch you next week where we'll be deconstructing how The Last Jedi destroys masculinity.
It's some Weird Science is somehow $15 on iTunes.
See, we were talking about this over dinner, and Panther showed me
Willow.
Willow is on the iTunes store at $20. Like, if it is a movie that's a cult classic, even if it's 30, 40 years old, they will gouge you at 15, 20 bucks. And then you'll see, like, another movie that was like, oh, it's kind of good, but, you know, maybe it's not, like, super highly regarded, and it'll be, like, $5, $6. There's, like, no real sense to their pricing scheme whatsoever. I guess a lot of it has to do with, like, what the studio that they're buying it from sets their minimum at or whatnot. But, is that a new keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay, I hadn't seen that before. So Saverin has a shiny-looking, I guess, gamer keyboard for his PC. It's got, like, red keys.
It's got function buttons. Ooh. Yeah, it has the volume controls.
It's red and black because he's just so fucking edgy, yo.
Yeah.
It also matches our acoustic foam, which is styrofoam that's got so much edge it'll cut you.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I had one of those IBM standard workstation keyboards for a while, mm-hmm. and then one of the feet broke off of it.
Oh.
And so I was like, well, I'll go take a look at the Tech Goodwill over in Plano, and they had that for like $4. So I was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
There's specifically a Tech Goodwill.
Yep, super tiny, but you can get like monitors and old RAM, and sometimes they have video games for retro consoles. It's off of like Independence and 15th Street over there in East Plano. Well, it's not East Plano, it's sort of middle Plano, really.
I gave a friend like 16 gigs of RAM, or wait, was it 32? I gave him 16 or 32 gigs of RAM one day. It was Tyrion and I's old RAM because we upgraded our computers from
old
16
RAM to new RAM.
But just less RAM to more RAM because I discovered that our motherboards were only using 50% of their capacity. And like 6-7 years ago, 16 gigs of RAM was like, yeah. Put on the shades. I'm going to hack the planet. It was a decent amount, right?
Yeah.
And now, like, you know, it used to be like I have Photoshop and InDesign and iTunes and 10 tabs open and Firefox open at once and not have a problem. And now I can't even have Photoshop and InDesign open without it just gobbling up all the RAM.
Yeah.
So I doubled my RAM. Now it's a lot. Now we both have 64 gigs of RAM plus whatever's on the video card.
Nice.
And I gave him all the old stuff, and I was like, you know, it's like DDR3. It's not like fucking super cutting edge RAM. It's the slower of the of that type DDRs. Of RAM. Yeah, I know Konami's made sequels since then.
Yeah, actually, they are doing a 20th anniversary edition of DDR, the Dance Dance Revolution.
Oh, how many gigabytes will it be?
420.
Nice.
So, yeah, actually, that is a topic for this week. They're doing a 20th anniversary edition of DDR. Called DDR-A20, and it has this shiny-ass gold machine that will probably not show up in the West ever.
It'll all be songs that were popular 20 years ago.
Well, the current machines, the DDR-A machines that are at Dave & Buster's and Round 1 around here, they do have, like, the vast majority of the songs from the entire series.
Cool.
All the original stuff that they had done that goes way, way, way back. Plus all the new stuff as well. But I'm way too fucking old to play that anymore.
Yeah, your knees would probably hate you.
I was like, man, I would love to play that, and I would immediately suffer for it. But it's cool that it exists. They're also doing, like, a phone game that somehow connects to Bluetooth. I guess it connects to Bluetooth game pads.
You do it with your fingers, maybe?
No, but they actually have shown they're making a home hard pad and a home soft pad. But they were like, the display they were showing it on was like looking like an iPhone. So I'm like, are you supposed to like throw it onto an Apple TV? Because that'd be cool as hell.
Yeah.
But it's also Konami, so they're not going to bring it west.
So we've probably talked about this before, but just give you the high level overview of what the import issue is there with bringing that to the US.
The reason DDR stopped getting licensed in the West so much is because they went to be doing a lot of Japanese pop music and stuff in the games. Mm-hmm. And Japan is incredibly strict and restrictive when it comes to licensing their stuff for the West. Like, there's lots and lots of musical groups that you can't even watch their music videos if you're in a US IP range.
Right.
A non-Japanese IP range. Hmm. So, like, getting songs licensed to play on American versions of the arcade machine was just a pain in the ass. And one of the ways that Konami went around to stop people from just importing the machines themselves, saying, fuck the police, was they installed basically always on DRM in the form of EMUs, which E-MUs is the name of the system. Mm-hmm. And it's networking, so like you can see global leaderboards and shit and track your scores from place to place.
So it has functionality beyond just DRM.
But it is still DRM.
Right.
And so only in the last while did they allow the Western company, Dave & Buster's, mm-hmm. to import and have access to EMUs.
It was probably D&B being as big as they are and nationwide. They like, handed them a big fucking check.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Konami, we've got a fuckload of these stores, and we're going to buy 10,000 copies of this arcade machine from you at $20,000 a pop.
Right.
That's cool, right? And they go, yeah, sure, whatever.
Which sucks in one way because it squeezes out any, like, mom-and-pop arcade operation.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like somebody was able to bring these impossible to get machines over here.
And the other company that has access to a lot of the cool Japanese shit is Round One, which is literally a Japanese arcade chain that has come west.
Oh, okay. So they're, of course, they're going to try to work something out with them being a Japanese headquartered company.
So they have a lot of the music games that are utterly unavailable elsewhere.
Right. And we have one here locally too.
We have two, actually.
Oh, cool.
We have one at Great Van Mills and one at the Parks Mall.
Neat.
And they're both very well appointed places.
How big are they, not physical size, I mean in like number of locations, how big are they compared to Dave & Buster's?
Compared to Dave & Buster's in the U.S., they have maybe a dozen locations.
Okay.
In the U.S., and like three of them in California, one's in Seattle, one in Chicago, two here, couple on the East Coast. They're very, very, very spread out.
But D&B has got like probably hundreds of locations. So we're very fortunate here. Is like clearly DFW is like a major market. If we have two Round Ones and we have two of that
Kinokuniya books,
yes, which is a major Japanese bookstore chain, which has existed in Canada and a lot of other countries for decades. They finally entered the U.S. market like 2 years ago. And out of the very few across the country that were going to get any, we got two of them.
Yeah.
So, like,
well, they
this is a big market.
One over in the Asian, shopping area,
yeah.
And then one in Plano is in another Asian central area. I mean, North Texas has one of the highest concentration of Asian expats in the country.
Cool.
It's just one of those things where it's like we have lots and lots of Asian folks and they have such good food.
You know, I didn't.
They're little districts.
Another area kind of like that. I didn't know until. So I watched an Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown episode, not probably a couple months ago, on Houston. And originally I was sort of reticent. I was like, fuck Houston. Well, okay. I didn't find Houston like an incredibly interesting or exotic place.
It's big.
You know? But it turned out really interesting because what I didn't know is that Houston has a very large Vietnamese population and they've opened a lot of restaurants in the area. And the reason is after the Vietnam War, people were fleeing Vietnam because a lot of them didn't want to be under communist rule. And Houston is a port city and they're literally self-described boat people. It basically sought asylum in the harbor in Houston, and they settled in Houston and Sugar Land and the surrounding areas. So like a lot of the episode on Houston was about all of the Vietnamese culture and restaurants in the area. And I found that very interesting.
So looking at the demographics of the region, DFW, on Wikipedia.com, according to 2000 U.S. Census, which that's old, but Plano, along with Houston, has one of the state's two major settlements of Chinese Americans. As of 2011, 5% of Plano's population is ethnic Chinese. And basically it's like in Richardson as well. So there's that. And then you have a huge amount of Asian Indian folk. And then scrolling down further, Koreans, there's a one of the there's a South Korean consular office in
locally.
Yeah. Really? Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure it's in by up by Kinokuniya and Daiso and all that up there.
Neat.
Because there's just that many folks that live here.
It's cool as hell.
So yeah, we're very lucky that we're able to get those things here because we just have such a nice big immigrant population.
I don't even know where the nearest British consulate is. I think one time I looked and it was like, I'd have to go to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
That's probably where the embassy is, of course. But I don't think they have that many like satellite consulate offices around the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. But
the other thing is British immigrants are like, we're so scattered. We're like everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's like any big centralized populations.
So where should we start on the topics for the week, Fuzz?
I haven't looked. I threw some stuff in there. I'll go ahead and chat out the one that I read about earlier. So some of you may remember the heinous tale of Kim Davis, the Kentucky county clerk who, after equal marriage was legalized nationwide, still refused to sign people's marriage licenses.
Yeah.
And, you know, several same-sex couples had taken her to court. And, you know, she got all this, like, praise and funding and people on the right lifting her up and stuff like that.
Lots of wingnut welfare.
And then she lost her election last year, I think, to a gay guy.
Uh-huh. So one of the people she'd refused service to, if I recall correctly.
Right, which is like fucking total karmic justice. Well, the karma just keeps coming for her because now it looks like she's going to owe about $250,000 in court fees. The people suing her, it's their court fees, but the courts ruled that she has to pay them because she was legally in the wrong. So, oh, wow. Being a bigot is getting expensive. Yeah. The tweet I posted here is $225,000 to gay plaintiffs for, quote, violating civil rights. And that's the Kentucky governor's office said that. So
yeah, it's not God like damn. The courts. It's like, no, the governor is like, nah, dude, you fucked up. And also, speaking of good schadenfreude, the thing about the Wolves of Odin domain.
So I was not familiar with Wolves of Odin. I guess it's a far-right white supremacy group in Canada.
I guess.
It's basically a Canadian bot. I think it's wolvesofodin.ca, which makes sense because like .ca would be like, it's the .com for Canada. Yeah, it's wolvesofodin.ca. The tweet is just, prankster buys Wolves of Odin domain, turns it into furry fan site. So if you go to wolvesofodin.ca, it's, welcome to the wolves den, time to woo a mate. And I was very unhappy that they missed out on a great pun, because I would have said, time to woo a mate.
Yeah, they really dropped the ball.
Yeah, but it's got, you know, some slightly horny furry art there with titles like, Two Pups, One Cup, Doggy Treat 69, White _ Power _Bottom. Can't wait to fill me up like a Twinkie. but it also has a link to a GoFundMe to support hate-free YEG graffiti removal. And YEG is an area of Canada that they're trying to remove, like, hate speech and shit like that. And you can buy the domain for a $10,000 donation. So if you want wolvesofodin.ca, you can buy it for 10 grand.
Yeah.
But I'd encourage everyone to just go to it to enjoy the joke. And if you want to click on and donate to the GoFundMe, that link is on the website. I'm going to mix up sober news and happy news. So on sober news, Dick Miller one of American cinema's greatest character actors has passed away at the age of 90. He had a good long run, obviously. He has been acting since forever. Sometimes he was a lead character. Most of the time, he's what you call a character actor. It's like, you may not know his name, but if you saw a picture of him, you'd fucking recognize him, because this dude has been in everything. His biggest roles are probably Gremlins and Gremlins 2. He was in Chopping Mall. He is the janitor.
Who dies immediately.
He's like the first victim of the Chopping Mall robots. He also has a very brief scene in the first Terminator movie as the clerk or store owner of the gun store that the Terminator goes in to buy his weapons. The Terminator starts loading a gun. His character goes, "Hey, you can't do that." Terminator goes, "Wrong," and blows him away. But he was just in all kinds of stuff. Like, Mark Hamill actually tweeted about him. Mark Hamill had done a movie with him in the mid-70s, before Star Wars, you know, before Mark Hamill was super well known as Luke Skywalker. And, you know, he was acting for ages. And I don't know if you remember this, Savern, but Dick Miller was one of the celebrities I got to meet at Texas Frightmare Weekend when you and I went years ago.
Yeah, because didn't he sign your copy of Chopping Mall?
He signed my copy of Chopping Mall, and I got my picture taken with him.
Okay, cool. So
that was the one I felt really guilty about, because I was like so excited to meet him. I shook his hand, and I swear I could feel the fucking bones grinding in his hand at that. And I was like, "Oh, I forgot you're like 83. I'm sorry." But yeah, he has, like I said, sadly passed away, but 90 years old. He made a living doing what he loved, and he will always be remembered by film aficionados. Just wanted to shout out there for anyone like me that knows weird movie trivia and various actors. So over to you, Savern. Throw something in here.
All right, so here's something fun. If you would like to entertain yourself and add a whole bunch of new people to your block list on twitter.com,
oh God,
you can go to Wolfenstein on Twitter. On there, they tweeted with the hashtag "thing I would ban," and they tweeted Nazis. If you have any familiarity with the video game series Wolfenstein, it has been about killing Nazis since day one, since Castle Wolfenstein on, like, the Apple II.
80s or 90s.
It was a 2D ASCII-based game to begin with, and then it was the first, like, 3D shooter. Like, it predated Doom.
So, for 40-odd years, yes, their whole thing has been killing Nazis.
Killing Nazis, killing Nazis, killing more Nazis, killing Nazis on the moon, killing Nazis on Venus, killing Nazis in the past, killing zombie Nazis, killing robot Nazis, and just any Nazis or their collaborators.
So they tweeted that they would ban Nazis, and I'm assuming there was some real brain geniuses that were like, "Why are you getting political?
How dare those gamers over at Bethesda and Machine Games, who make this World War II shooter about killing Nazis everywhere, be political?"
It'd be like some MAGA guy going to see Inglourious Basterds and being like, "I hope this movie doesn't do anything to offend me."
Yeah, or the, "Well, why don't you debate the Nazis?" And people would joke about that when Wolfenstein 2 came out. I was like, "I keep trying to debate these Nazis with facts and logic, but they just keep shooting me to death. What am I doing wrong?"
Honestly, I think that should actually be a path that you could take in the video game. And, where, like, you know, press S to shoot or D to debate. And if you hit D, just get fucking shot and killed instantly.
It's like, big win in the marketplace of ideas.
Or as you're about to shoot, another character comes on and says, "Wait, wait, wait. We should hear both sides of the..."
"Oh, if you think your argument's so strong, but yet you resort to violence?" So that was fun. Panther got a lot of enjoyment out of it. I got a lot of enjoyment out of it.
I want to see the cutscene where the Nazis die. Just so much for the tolerant left.
Yeah. And they even mocked it in the game. There's a scene where you're sneaking into Roswell, which has one of their rocket bases.
Because we're killing alien Nazis?
No, we're just killing Nazis who found, like, tech. And now, this is, like, the late 60s in this. And the Nazis have been in power for, like, 20 years.
Gotcha.
And so they have their like, magical super tech that's also part of the game lore. And they have a space station on Venus. And they have yada, yada, yada. And you're sneaking in to get to this rocket train that'll take you to this Roswell base. And there are these two Nazis leaning on a thing talking about how intolerant some of these people are against their ideology. Why don't they want to debate us? It's so unfair. And then they go on to talk about how they hope they get put on the same death squad in New Orleans.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think I remember you telling me about this back when the latest one came out.
And I made sure to melee kill both those fuckers.
Yeah.
What's nice is if you're crouched melee kill, you chop their legs off at the knee with your hatchet. And then the guy turns around and got a fucking hatchet in the face.
Wow.
It's brutal as shit. It's great. It's a fun game, and you can get it for pretty cheap now, too.
So this sort of reminded me of, like, one of my favorite Doctor Who plot lines in the audio plays. It's the Seventh Doctor storyline where there's an alternate timeline created because Ace and the Doctor land at Colditz Castle, which is a big Nazi fortress where they kept their political prisoners and a lot of their POWs. And basically, the end of the adventure, Ace leaves behind her CD player. And so you're in the early 40s here. And this creates an alternate timeline where the surviving Nazis have access to laser technology in the early 40s and miniaturized technology. And they start making scientific advances based on this portable CD player. Then there's like, it also branches into at one point, the Doctor tries to go back and get it back. And in this alternate timeline, they kill him. So now they have the TARDIS and they figure out how to break into it and how to use it. And they start manipulating time so that every time the Third Reich is about to be overthrown, they go back in time, they give their generals the information of what they did wrong, and they change history again so that they succeed. So there's an episode called The Architects of History, which is a great fucking title, where the woman Klein, who's causing all this, travels to 2044 to celebrate the glorious 200th anniversary of the Third Reich.
Oh.
And they've got the Seventh Doctor in a cell, and it's something weird has happened with time because this is kind of solidifying into becoming the main timeline. So the Doctor's consciousness has basically replaced the consciousness of his alternate timeline persona, who had been planning shit in the background, but this version of the Doctor doesn't know what it was. And doesn't know this history. And so he's kind of trying to figure it out. Like, he knows that there is a way to reverse what's happened. And he knows that there is another TARDIS somewhere that, you know, that Klein's trying to find, because she has her TARDIS, but she knows the Doctor had to get there somehow too. So there is another TARDIS hidden somewhere. And it's great. It leads into this whole alternate thing where she ends up becoming a companion for a while. And then he changes her history and she's different in the prime timeline. It's good shit. Sorry, totally nerding out there. Look up the Elizabeth Klein stories on Big Finish's website and start with Colditz. And go from there if you want to dip your toe into some Doctor Who alternate history kind of storytelling. It's a really good story arc. It's all about the Nazis and how shit they are.
Yeah. So moving on to, speaking of Nazis, the most recent episodes of Last Podcast on the Left are Ultra Gold Star. Holy shit.
Yeah. I love their idea of they sprinkle in facts about the TV show Home Improvement that somehow do kind of take your mind off of the horrific fucking thing that they've just told you about Joseph Mengele. But they go into detail about some of the shit that Mengele does. And, you know, and then the other two will be like, Marcus will finish talking. The other two will be like, holy fuck.
I need another fact.
You'll be like, well, originally Al was going to be called, what, Gene or Greg?
Something
or
like
something,
that.
Something like that. And they were like, oh, huh. Yeah, that does kind of lessen the stakes. It's been a really, I don't want to say good or fun, but it's been really interesting.
It's informative, but also the fact, I like the fact that they've split it into three episodes where the third episode is just the Nazi hunters.
Oh,
and it's going to be all about the people that hunted down and owned the Nazis that tried to escape.
That is going to be a real palate cleanser after episode two.
Yeah.
Another one, they did a side story that was really interesting where they interviewed this guy who used to be a cop and is an expert on stalkers and stalking and has written a book about it and basically advises other law enforcement officials on stalking because a lot of people are not trained specifically how to look for stalking behavior. It's like a lot of the shit that stalkers do is not quote unquote technically illegal, but you can see, if you're trained to look for it, you can see the clear pattern of the, yeah, this person is a stalker. Did you listen to that one at all?
I have not yet.
It's actually a really interesting interview.
My podcast list is bad right now.
Right, yeah.
Because I've not gone to the gym the last couple nights. I've done walks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're streaming or editing or whatever, you can't listen to podcasts. And if you're not driving around, like, I'll catch up on podcasts this coming weekend.
Yeah.
But I am way behind for now.
They also, they did another episode where they talked about, I haven't watched it yet. Have you watched the Ted Bundy tapes?
I have not.
On Netflix. They talk about that, and they have sort of a, I can't say at the end whether they liked it or not. They have a real love-hate relationship with it, because they're like, it's clearly a cash grab, and it's like this book that it was based on his tapes was written like 20 years ago. So there's nothing new to be learned from this documentary pretty much. But at the same time, they're also like, this is a really well-made documentary. It's really well produced. It's everything that you want in a true crime documentary. So they have like a real love-hate kind of reaction to it. It's kind of interesting. But I don't know if I'll watch it or not. I mean, I'm not like, serial killer thing is not like my main motivation or, you know, my main interest as far as stuff goes. I mean, maybe I'll check it out sometime.
I've seen some tweets from folks that say, like, they were in their office and their coworkers like, oh, he's such a handsome man.
That is not the lesson you should take from this.
And then their reply is like, he raped and killed a 12-year-old. And that just, like, kills the mood of the place. Like, no shit.
No shit. Yeah, that's something they actually address on their side stories about this, is that all the people talk about how handsome he was. And then, like, even they talk about some of their other killers. They're like, oh, he's so smart or so mysterious or so charismatic or something like that. And then you're like, and they also say, the reason why they go into the gory detail of these serial killers' crimes on last podcast is to show that, no, they're not this handsome guy or this misunderstood person or this charismatic joker. Here is the truly horrible thing that they did in vivid detail. Yeah. And it's not about humanizing these people. It's about, no, you need to stop lionizing them.
Yeah.
This is what they did, and it's really fucked up.
Plus, they also tend to point out that a lot of the reason why these people got away with their shit for so long was because the cops are fucking incompetent and really didn't give a shit. Plus, they didn't communicate with each other for a long period of time, so people just moved around.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit that you could do. Like, even as recently as, like, the early 2000s.
Yeah.
The crimes you could commit that would never be tracked back to you because what the fuck is networking?
I mean, Robert Pickton was 2005. Mm-hmm. That one dude that got the two-parter who was a total fucking loser.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to kill two people, only succeeded in killing one. But he was just this real piece of shit loser.
Is that the Canadian
guy? Yeah, the Canadian guy.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, I mean, it's not that they're there. Ultra predators. They're just, the cops are incompetent and
oh my god, care. Some of these fucking cops are like, Some of them, the killer themselves handed himself to them on a silver platter, and they don't catch on until like five dead bodies later. It's nuts. But anyway, your recommendation for last podcast on the left, I guess.
Yeah.
We've been enjoying it for a couple of years now.
Another one I've been enjoying recently is Street Fight Radio.
I've not heard that one. What's that one about?
It's just anarcho comedy. It's like a couple hours. It's these two dads. They're out of Ohio and they talk politics and other nonsense. It's pretty fun.
I wonder if that's the same one I heard an ad for. I heard an ad for. I started listening to Behind the Bastards.
Yeah.
Which is another good show. And I heard an ad for a podcast that was about two dads explaining stuff.
Yeah. I think that's probably. That's it? Kind of it. But it's like a weekly, like they actually air on a radio station, but they put the unedited version up on their podcast feed.
Right. And yeah, Behind the Bastards, I only started listening to that like a couple weeks ago, worked my way through a few episodes now. They did a three-parter on Mark Zuckerberg, and what a piece of shit he is. Like, all this stuff that you see him saying nowadays when he goes before Congress and it's like, oh, we had no idea that anyone would ever use this information for nefarious means, and it's totally safe with us. And then they have, like, actual IM conversations from him back in the early days when he was coding his very first things. They're like, people trust me with their information. I don't know why. They're fucking idiots. And it's just like, and like, he's always been just sort of sociopathic, you know? Just like, fucking with people, even when it was only like four or five people in his family. And now he has the information of how many
billions.
I don't know what Facebook's user numbers are at this point.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, there's a, it's almost like the dollop. The dollop is another really good one. Like, I love the episodes on John McCain and George H.W. Bush. Because they're sort of like, we knew these people were shitty, but we didn't know how shitty. And they go through their whole lives. And they're like, John Sidney McCain. And they're like, you know, he got into flight school because of his daddy. And he crashed like two or three jets before even going to Vietnam. Like, he shouldn't have been approved for flight, and he was. Because of who he was and who he knew, and just all kinds of other shit, and just some of the shit that George H.W. Bush condoned or signed off on, like, holy balls. And there's a lot of really good, informative, often sobering and depressing things out there. They did do a more lighthearted episode not too long ago, which was quite good. So the way the dollop starts, the one host is going to tell a story from, quote, American history to his friend who has no idea what the topic is about. So he starts explaining, and the story is usually kind of slowly come together for the other guy, right? This one was the origin of truck nuts. So they're like, he's like, I thought we'd take a break from, you know, the hardcore,
the grim and the dark
stuff, and the grim and the dark, right? And how there was like two competing truck nuts companies in the early days that both stole their ideas from other people anyway. And you're talking about turn of the century, so like, who gets the URL first? And there's like the trucknuts.com, and then there's another one that's like Just Nuts or something like that, and like, one of them's billing themselves as the first truck nuts on the internet, you know, and they have this like long-standing feud of like subtweeting each other 10 years before Twitter existed. And it's like, this shit is deep, man. Like, there's this big long story about truck nuts that you never thought you wanted to hear, but you do. It's weirdly interesting.
So, to add to the fun stuff,
okay,
this right here, Harry Potter and the Pre-Dawn Raid.
Fuck. Oh, my God. So
Roger Stone.
So what was So I was like, okay, I'm not like super, super keeping up on the politics lately because, you know, when it comes to like people in Trump's orbit, like being indicted, arrested, or going to jail for things, there's just so many assholes. There's like too many assholes for me to keep track of. So I go to Wikipedia and I read Roger Stone's, the article on Roger Stone, right? And there's a big ass section in his Wikipedia article about how amazing he is at fashion and how intricate and precise he is. And he said something like a single breasted jacket is only worn by savages. This is like for a suit coat or something, like these really highfalutin opinions of how a man should dress. And then every fucking picture I've seen of him since then is incredible. Like, I retweeted something like, you know, Roger Stone arrested and raided by FBI for dropping the boot into the dip. And it's like a picture of Christopher Lloyd from, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and you swipe and you see the picture of Roger Stone and he's wearing a fucking top hat and his little circular glasses and he looks like a fucking cartoon villain.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, every picture I've seen of him is like some fucking Disney villain. Like, this motherfucker is about to break into song and then fall off a cliff.
Hey, you know, and they have like 7 counts against him, something like that. And they got multiple years of his communications because they raided his everything. And so we'll see what happens. If you want to, he's another one of those utter bastard types. He has a Netflix documentary called Get Me Roger Stone.
I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
Where it's just like, Roger Stone, he really is a shit. And it talks about all his dirty tricks. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a guy that has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back.
That's right, yeah.
So, he's a bit of a bastard.
Yeah, he really is a shit. I wonder if there is either a Behind the Bastards or Dollop, or possibly both, about him. That would be interesting.
So, another fun thing. You link this one. It's like, teenager arrested after buying PlayStation 4 for £8 by weighing it in the fruit section and paying for 6 pounds of food at self-service till.
Yes.
So
this happened in France. It was a 19-year-old from a small town in France. And he was trying to get money for a train ticket back home. And I put it in there, and it was one of those things where I was like, I hadn't heard of the website, so I'm like, it might turn out to be total fabrication. There's a lot of people saying that it was real. The story just amused me. And somebody pointed out, well, this is what happens when you don't hire humans.
Yeah.
Because he went through an automated checkout, and he just put fruit. He put the fucking PS3 box on there. It weighed six pounds,
I guess.
Yeah. You know what somebody pointed out, though, was would have been more appropriate if it had been an iPad.
Yeah.
As an Apple fruit.
Nice. Yeah, I mean,
this is where it gets dumb, because everyone was like, oh, totally applaud his ingenuity. And I'm like, okay, I'll give a fuck. Here's where it gets stupid. He got caught because he went back to the same store the next day and tried to do it again. There's been other stories on the, like the dumb criminals alert, you know, where like the guy who steals a stereo, but he got the wrong speaker, so he goes back the next day to steal the right speakers and he gets arrested. Like, that happened at one point. And it's just like, when you get greedy or you get stupid, it's when you get caught. Like, holy shit. You had this, frankly, very creative idea of a theft, and it worked. Pat yourself on the back and move on, man. I mean, maybe do it again at another chain, but don't do it at the same fucking store the very next day. Like,
yeah.
I'm assuming that he was desperate because he was trying to buy a train ticket for whatever reason, but nah, man, you failed the criminal test.
You don't go back to the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
Gotta just move on with your next grift. Here's another fun thing. We have lots of fun things, not a lot of politics, just like some random shit that we've seen on the internet. And this is a new angle for anti-vaxxers. Did you read this one?
I haven't. So I saw you linked something about this. I have not read it. So fucking hit me with your best shots.
Okay. This is from a post in the Facebook group Galactic Federation of Light. Vaccines/flu shots versus star children. If you have a baby, would you give him or her vaccines knowing that baby could be one of the many star children, all caps, born here with a gift to save humanity?
So already my cult alarm is going off.
Important. Star children cannot stand vaccines and often slash easily become autistic or develop some kind of physical disability quickly after vaccinated. That's their right. That's what they put. On rare cases, the star children's souls will quickly exit the body, resulting in dead Barbies just a few days or weeks after getting vaccines. Because of their much higher frequencies, star children's souls, all caps, despise low-frequency stuffs like vaccines, filled with toxins, low-frequency food like canned food slash processed food, or low-frequency places like slaughterhouse, butchery, or cemeteries. Why are you taking your star child to a slaughterhouse? Vaccines are intentionally designed to slow down planetary ascension, all caps, by blocking the next waves of star children from being born and growing up as they intended. Nevertheless, the star children's souls, not in all caps, will find other parents to incarnate because they are determined to be here to ascend Mother Earth. So,
this is me speaking in my human voice.
Hail Zoltan! So, you know, if you have a star child, you should still get it vaccinated. If they become a dead Barbie, that sucks, but don't...
Throw some shrimp on them, they'll
yeah,
be fine.
Yeah, you know? They're still useful if they're a dead Barbie. You just need some fuel.
This is like some bizarre offshoot of Scientology, is what it sounds like.
It's New Age anti-vaxxers. You know, anti-vaxxers are unscientific and New Age anti-vaxxers take it to the next level. It really sucks, though, because...
This is one of those things where, like, your Poe's Law sense really goes haywire because, like, having watched that Flat Earth video that you showed me, there was a H-Bomber guy did a video on debunking Flat Earth. I think it was called With Respectfully.
Earth. A Measured Response,
a Flat Measured Earth. Response, right. And you see some of these things that are like these sincerely held beliefs that the Earth is flat and here's why and here's what a flat Earth map would look like. And you're just like, I'm just like, oh my God, you know, people actually believe this. Holy shit. So when I hear something like that, it's sort of like my brain is like someone's having a fun day at the Onion or holy fuck, people actually believe this. And I'm like, yeah, it's people actually believe this, right? I mean, they're already dumb enough to think that vaccinations cause autism.
Yeah.
Why not take it a few steps further to be like, you know, instead of getting them shots, just cover them with crystals.
I mean, Panther sent me a link earlier today to a Not Always Right that was about a recounted story. I mean, those stories are often kind of sound kind of bullshit, but they could be true, could be not, whatever. Mm-hmm. About a 16-year-old in Australia who came in with her mother freaking out behind her because in Australia, apparently, at age 16, you can get a doctor's visit without your parents' consent.
Okay.
And she was getting vaccinated, and her mom freaked out about it.
Yeah.
And, like, left her there. But then she just called her dad, and he picked her up.
Can see that happening.
And the thing is, that's caused a measles outbreak in Washington State because an unvaccinated person went to a Supersonics game.
So apparently my flailing my arms about met my stand credit for this hour.
Cool.
Because I was just so agitated at the story.
You're just like, ah, people, ah, I must wiggle.
Yeah.
Gotta get those stand credits.
Oh, man, I can't believe people. And yeah, that measured response to Flat Earth video, you should totally check it out. When Saren's like, it's a 45 minute long video about Flat Earth, I was like, fuck, dude, I don't know. But it's actually really good.
Yeah. I watched a couple more of his videos, like a measured response, Bill Nye versus science, where it's all the people that were getting mad about Bill Nye reported supposedly changing his stance on gender as a spectrum.
Right.
Because they were like, oh, well, you said this shit in 1994. Why aren't you saying it today? Did the SJWs get to you?
Oh, my God. Someone who just doesn't know how the fuck science works.
Yes.
Like new evidence presents itself. You change your theory. You don't change the facts to fit your theory. It's the other. You evolve your theory to fit the new information.
So it was, they had two videos on it. It was pretty funny. I watched them while doing
something. Sorry for totally preaching to the choir there. I know you know
this. But still.
It just sort of strikes me as like, oh my God. I mean, I was taught the scientific method in like fifth grade. I'm like, I still know how it's supposed to work, you know?
Well, plus you're also looking at a children's science show from the mid-90s, right, which isn't going to go into the nuance of sexuality and gender as a spectrum.
Right, yeah.
In a 30-minute children's science show on ABC.
So they're actually, they're attacking you based on that? Like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, in the middle of a lesson about the solar system, he's suddenly going to throw out, by the way, kids, there is no God.
Gender is fake. It was made in the 1800s to sell more bathrooms. Who gives a fuck?
The scientific basis for the gender as a spectrum is not something I'm actually well versed on, because that's a relatively new concept to me. But like, I might watch that video because I kind of want to know more about what the actual I know there's scientific backing for this, but I don't know what it is. And I'd kind of like to know.
The episode's Bill Nye Saves the World on Netflix.
Okay.
The actual show.
So he does like a whole episode.
Yeah, it's a full episode on it.
Cool.
And it's done to a more adult audience, but it's still very like kind of superficial, but still covers all the topics.
It's layman's terms.
Yeah.
I guess.
So you can watch that, and then you can maybe watch the H Bomber Guy videos about people being mad dipshits about it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, that shit's really interesting. And I'm like, hey, this is something I don't understand. Let me go out and find out more about it. Or I could just angrily tweet at Bill Nye. I mean, I don't know which is more
You've
productive.
Ruined my childhood by looking at new evidence and modifying your positions.
I'd have to be 15 years younger for this to ruin my childhood.
But, exactly. Yeah. Also, I mean, it was a children's science show that aired after the cartoons on Saturday mornings.
I mean, my childhood science guy was Mr. Wizard.
Yeah.
Who was like the 80s guy, I guess. And Bill Nye was sort of the 90s guy.
And yeah, and then there was also Beekman's World.
I've heard of Beekman's World. I know way less about it.
It was even more superficial than Bill Nye's was.
Isn't he a Muppet? Am I thinking?
No, but he did have a dude that was dressed as a giant rat.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was weird.
Like Gary the Rat?
Those were the two children's television science shows.
I've never seen an episode of Bill Nye. I've seen him being interviewed a couple of times. Like, he popped up on The Daily Show back when I was a more regular viewer. But yeah, I've never actually seen an episode of him, which is like, shockingly, I'm older than most of you.
Yeah, I mean, we are much older than the average age of furries, but that's okay. We're here to dispense our wisdom.
You know, on that point, not in the topics list, but Twitter handle, it's Brenda Banks, tweeted this a day or two ago. Something like, I remember in my early 20s thinking that I would never still be in this, meaning the furry fandom, after my 20s. Like, you know, why the fuck would I still do that, right? And then they were like, for those of you in your 30s and older, what keeps you here? And a lot of people replied that were older furries, including me. And I was like, I'm 43, and here's why I'm still a furry, and basically what the fandom is to me, right? Mm-hmm. So it's actually a pretty positive thread of, you know, things about like all these like older quote unquote people, you know, older furries, you know. And I'm like, I guess if like it depends what you're looking for in the fandom, you know. If you're looking for like partying and dancing and hooking up, and that's the extent of it, not saying that that's what it's Brenda Banks is doing, then yeah, people quote grow up and quote settle down at some point, generally. But if you're like me, or like, well, for me, it's like, it's the writing, you know. And I met my husband through the fandom, and we own a business together, and literally all my friends are furries, you know. Why would I leave? And a lot of people I've seen people leave in the past, they're like, oh, the fandom's toxic, the fandom has drama, the fandom has this, the fandom has that. The thing is, though, the fandom is getting better with age, not the opposite.
Yeah.
Like, it has become more diverse, more inclusive. People are becoming more open about saying, hey, this person can draw dicks really good,
but they're a shit.
But they're a Nazi, or they're a pedophile, or they're just an abusive fucking person, or you may have a really cute fursuit, but you fuck dogs, or, you know, fill in the blank here with shitty trait. Mm-hmm. And that's not cool. And people are actually making a movement to be like, hey, just because we have that geek fallacy of everyone is equal and we have to let everybody into the group, like, that is a fallacy. It's that all-inclusive.
Well, and if you're so, a furry, you must be good because furries are good.
Right. That's all part of it. Furries
should be friends.
And there's also the inclusivity paradox of having to hear both sides, quote-unquote, and open your doors to everybody, including the people that want to kill everybody else. And it's, and people are finally opening up to the, oh, you know, like literally the guy that started the Nazi Furs group on LiveJournal started it in like 2002 for uniform fetishists. And he's always maintained that it was not at all about the political aspirations of the Nazi party. He just a couple of years ago was like, I would never set up a group like that today because this shit is not at all what it was supposed to be about. And I totally disavow the any association with the modern Nazi fur movement. Because people were still using that excuse. Oh, it's just about the uniforms. Meanwhile, you see in their private chats, you know, racial slurs, anti-Semitic, this and that, yeah. You know.
A lot of my reasons for staying in the fandom are pretty close to yours. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I'm still heavily involved with Fiesta.
Yeah.
You know, I serve on the board and have since its inception. I find that work rewarding. I appreciate the fandom for being as extremely openly queer and weird as it is. Like, there is no other fandom on the planet that you can just be as weird and has probably on average a lower proportion of Nazis. Can't say that about, say, anime, and don't want to say that about gamers. But furries, we've got plenty of bad eggs, but we've got lots of good ones, too.
Yeah.
And we think we're doing a pretty good job of handling the bad eggs.
Well, the people that think that, like, oh, it's this horrible thing, it's like, look, there were furries that were Nazis and racists in the 90s. There were racist furries in the 2000s. The difference now is that we're actually saying, no.
Hey, fuck off.
Fuck off. You can't be in the fandom if you hold those attitudes.
Or if you are, you're not going to be able to play with us.
Right.
It's a bit of the fixing the broken stair.
Yeah.
If you are aware of that phrase.
I am, yeah.
A broken stair is somebody in an environment that you have to work around.
Yeah. And the analogy being that if you have a broken stair in your home, you get used to stepping over that gap every day. But anyone that's not aware of that gap is going to, you know, injure themselves by stepping through the missing stair. And it's sort of like the, oh, that's just Bob. He's just like that. But really, he's a great guy. It's sort of like the person at my New Year party who is like, hey, can I bring in my friend? He's a little rough around the edges, but he's a great guy. And then the rest of the time was like the majority of the con staff of Fiesta pulling Tyrion aside and being like, hey, keep an eye on that guy. He's kind of trouble in group settings.
Yeah.
And being like, ah, okay, well, he didn't steal anything that we know of, and he didn't get drunk or punch anybody out or vomit anywhere, so that's good.
But he's not invited next time.
Someone who's, like, mildly awkward to be around, I guess. But, you know, hopefully, you know, and I basically said, you're like, yeah, they're invited as long as they're not, like, a Nazi or a kleptomaniac. Or, you know, they're going to shit on my rug or something.
Hey, but I mean, it's good and like...
The fans are actually putting a spotlight on this and watching the roaches flee. No offense to Uncle Kage.
Yeah, he hasn't fled yet.
The bad roaches, the Nazi roaches.
Yes.
You know, Nazi roaches, fuck off. Get the raid.
Bug bomb them.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But this is a good thing.
Yeah, like, it's a good thing.
We're, unlike, you know, other communities of gamers, we're actually doing something about it. You know, we're working to improve our community.
And I think I've put this out before, like, even the circles are trying to, like, reclaim their reputation.
Yeah.
Like, the people that basically run the Sorrel community are doing their damnedest to...
Like the dude that invented the species, because it's a created species,
yeah.
Just like Jackets and a couple of and Skilltares and a couple of other ones are.
Dutch Angel Dragons. Dutch Angle Dragons. They're like crown molding.
Oh my God. The Dutch Angle Dragon is like related to the Sorrel, like they
very wedge-like
together. Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, you're the wheel to my cheese wedge.
Yes.
We found each other. But no, good on them. I mean, like, from what I'd read, like, the creator of the Sorrels was, like, is not down with them being widely seen as, like, the Nazi species.
Yeah. You know? Well, because for a while there, basically, if a person had a Sorrel icon, it was a red flag.
Right.
It was a furry red hat, you know?
Yeah.
Or like an anime icon of a Tohu girl spouting white supremacy nonsense.
Right.
You know, yeah. That is 99% a white dude being a shit.
Yeah.
So that's good on them for trying to say, no, this is a step too far. Fuck you. If you are a racist, you cannot be a Sorrel.
Yeah.
Like, they can't enforce it, but they can also disavow them. And I have actually seen people
we will kick you out of our Sorrel circle.
Yeah, you will not be a part of this cheesecake.
That's right. You're out of our wheel.
And so
Our wheelhouse.
I've seen people like making Sorrel side personas just so they can like quote reclaim the species as mm-hmm. Nope, they're a bunch of queers now. They're queer.
All the Sorrels are gay.
Yeah. It's like
they reproduce through budding.
Mm. Yeah. So the fandom I think is going in the right direction. Kicking out the shits.
Yeah.
Trying to elevate the people who should be and being like, hey, and not letting people skate by forever for their shit.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, this person, they draw real well. But the biggest example being Caro, he put this fucking billion word manifesto as why he's leaving the fandom and flouncing. And he can't format his text for shit. I looked at like some screen caps and was immediately turned off because his line break sucked. But I was like, you know what? Don't care. Fuck off.
I'm sorry. As a typographer, I couldn't read it.
Yeah. That's a lot of words to say. I'm leaving the fandom forever and flouncing off, and you're standing in the doorway looking back over your shoulder while we're all turning back to what we're doing. Go ahead.
Right.
Get out of here. Shoo.
But before I go, 20-minute speech.
Smack them on the butt with a paddle and send them on their way.
Don't disrespect my paddles like that.
At this point, how long have we been going?
About 11 years.
Yeah, and an hour 15.
Okay.
I have some more cool stuff to talk about, but it's like gaming related. It'll be quick.
Okay. I'll have an app.
Yeah. Just look at your phone and, okay. Well, I mean, you can see the horrible thing where I got a promoted ad for Mountain Dew and it's like, hey, gamers. And I'm like, no, my phone thinks I'm a gamer. Fucking mobile Twitter. Fuck you.
The fingerprint sensor on your iPhone detected Cheeto dust.
Oh no.
So it immediately served up a Mountain Dew ad.
Oh no. So I've picked streaming back up again, and I've streamed for like 6 days in the past week or so.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that the SNES actually has lots of really good titles on it. I got that SNES Mini down there.
Oh, right, yeah.
And like I mentioned, I think last week that I wanted to play Mario World, and I played it and did Mario World 96 Exit in like 4 hours and was like, that was fun. I'm going to play Zelda. And I played that over the course of like, I think 8 hours total to 100% it, going from memory.
Those games are actually incredibly long for something that was like, what, like an 8 kilobit cartridge or whatever.
8 megabit.
8 megabit.
The Legend of Zelda was 1 megabyte.
Wow.
Yeah. And like Final Fantasy VI, which is like a 65 hour plus RPG, it's like 3. Because I think it was a 24 megabit cartridge.
Like, knowing more about computers now than I did when I got my first Nintendo, it's just really amazing to be like, holy shit, how much they packed into those old games in an extraordinarily compact amount of disk space.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pull this up, see if I can find the size of it. But it's on the SNES Mini, and I haven't touched that one yet. But I played through Zelda, super enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to play Beautiful Katamari, and I played the entirety of that game in 3 hours, which, okay, didn't expect it to be that short, but I hadn't played the game since, like, 2015.
Right, yeah.
Like, my last save file date was, like, middle of 2015. and now, because Kingdom Hearts 3 is out, I am playing Kingdom Hearts 2, because that makes total sense, right?
Mm.
Like, I skipped 1 because the gameplay sucks ass. The camera sucks ass.
Right.
2 is much better, but I'm 2.5 hours in, And I think I might be done, mostly done with the prologue, but I don't know yet.
What?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where the Kingdom Hearts series of games, there's like literally a dozen games in the line now.
Oh, and 3 just came out. So there's a bunch of like side.
It's all side stories that take place in between like the first and second, and then after some that take place between 2 and the future of 3.
Final Fantasy was bad about 11-2 being a
well,
thing.
At least those games are continuous. Like 10-2 was a continuation of 10's story, but each Final Fantasy is standalone. This is 12-13 games that all have something to do with each other.
Mm-hmm. This is like one of those horrible Marvel or DC crossover summer events.
It literally is, where it's like, oh, you want to read everything that happens in the Secret Wars of Spider-Man, and it's like 35 different comics that are just
you
random numbers.
You have to read in this particular order.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man 14, Annoying Thor 5, Squirrel Girl 62. You know, it's like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I figured, and this is not a knock against the game or anything. It's like, I'm just going to play the game and just let that shit wash over me. I'm like, going to accept it as it comes.
The only thing I've heard about Kingdom Hearts storyline is it makes no sense.
That's all
I've seen on Twitter is that the story makes no sense.
It doesn't make much sense, and Sir Christopher Lee is one of the main villains.
No shit.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, like, I'm playing through this, and I hear this guy Diz or something. This super, like, angsty, edgy-looking belt and zipper kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
But it's Christopher Lee.
It's a very distinctive voice.
And I'm like, I'm playing this, and I'm like, is that fucking Christopher Lee? And I turn left in my computer chair and go to behind the voice actors, and I'm like, holy shit, that's Christopher Lee. Wow.
That's a good get, man.
It was 2005 at the height of his fucking power, and Disney paid him a shitload for it.
Yeah, because this was, like, he'd just done the Star Wars movies and the Lord of the Rings films around
that
time.
Yeah, so he was like, sure, I will take that.
You know, I remember reading someone on Twitter, this was like right after he had died. They were talking about their memory of him. And they had met him at a convention in the 80s or the 90s. And he was primarily known for like the Hammer horror films because it was a U.S. con. So like he wasn't really like admired for all his theater work like he is in Britain. And it was one of those cons where there was just nobody at his table. So this dude just walked up and had like a 30-minute conversation with Christopher Lee. And then years later, of course, he's Count Dooku, and then he's Saruman. And, you know, how you couldn't get near him without a mob. And it's so crazy how, like, people's, like, careers kind of go up and down like that. But, you know, like, that guy is really lucky. You know, he got to, like, actually have a conversation with him. Apparently, he's a really nice guy. And, you know, I always remembered it, like, he was, like, one of the biggest Nazi killers in World War II.
Yeah.
And then he became like an 82-year-old heavy metal singer.
Yep.
He was like the oldest person to be on a debut heavy metal album, I think. Yeah. He had a totally badass life.
Like, one of the things is like when Saruman gets stabbed in the back, he wouldn't scream. And the reason, because he's like, because, you know, he'd stabbed plenty of Nazis in the backs and collapses their lungs. They can't scream if they can't breathe.
Oh my God.
And so,
I don't think Peter Jackson was ready for that level of real when directing this guy.
I think there's an anecdote where he's like, he leans in and says, can you keep a secret? And the guy's like, yeah, sure. So can I. And that was it. So I'm enjoying it. It's 2.5 hours in. I haven't gotten to like any major gameplay yet, but I have gotten to see a bunch of random ass Final Fantasy cameos. It's like the sort of not really like the main early antagonist of Final Fantasy VIII and his two buddies, but also one of the black mages from Final Fantasy IX, and then also the airship guy from Final Fantasy VI.
Has the Wii Fit trainer shown up yet?
Not yet, but I imagine give it time. If it shows up like Kingdom Hearts 3.582 Pi for the Nintendo Switch, there will be a crossover between that and all the Smash Brothers roster.
Yeah.
Smashing Hearts.
You get Capcom into this, get some fucking Street Fighter characters in there.
Yeah, then it turns like into a Wreck-It Ralph thing. Yeah. Just give it time, and eventually Disney will consume all. And going back, the technical specs of the ROM for Final Fantasy 3/6 because it was 3 in the US, 6 the actual number, was 24 megabits. So yes, 3 megabytes if that entire game was in 3 megabytes.
Wow.
Also, the fact that I can remember that is, again, distressing, but also kind of interesting. It's like, I know all this stupid minutia, but I can't remember college.
That sounds like it should be a segment title. Distressing, but also kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I remember this minor fucking thing. Wow. So I'm playing through Kingdom Hearts 2. It seems fun. And the people playing Kingdom Hearts 3 seem to be having fun. There's a Waypoint, which is Vice's gaming website / podcast, is doing a two-part trying to break down the timeline of Kingdom Hearts. And I got partway through the first episode and I realized listening to this does not help me one bit. Like, having not played any of the side games, having not played one, I will be no less confused.
It's going to end up with a chart like the fucking royal family tree or something.
No, it'll look like a QAnon, like, conspiracy board.
Oh, God.
You've seen the one that's, like, a billion different things that includes, like, the Illuminati and lizard people and the Jews, but also...
It's just the Jews in the center with all the arrows leading to it?
More or less. The Illuminati...
I am glad that I am pretty out of the loop on the QAnon stuff. All I know is that they're a bunch of nuts coming up with some really wild conspiracy theories, and they're the people that were behind the whole Pizzagate thing, and that sadly right-wing politicians are taking them seriously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are the people that were like saying in January 1st there's going to be mass arrests and military tribunals and executions, and that, like,
oh, because the Democrats took over the House.
Yeah, and they were going to stop it, and then also X was going to happen, Y was going to happen, and now, like, there was some other thing that happened recently that's causing more schism. So basically they're shedding...
Did they think Pelosi was going to roll up on D.C. with a fucking tank and, like, just roll her into the White House and knock down the doors or something?
It's well,
just...
they were also, like, saying that Trump would get the wall or the shutdown whenever in. So when that happened, they were super... So basically, they've been... they're all the people that ever believed in that are incredibly just... they have bad brain. And they're gullible.
Apparently, they all turned into, like, a pillar of salt the day that Trump caved on the wall.
I guess. But the thing is, like, they're shedding... their followers, but they're still very crazy pants. Right. But now they're just getting this, like, more and more extreme little ball of hate and weird that is going to get people killed. There was an incident here in Texas where some MAGA hat wearing old man was refusing to leave some drag event here in Texas and was like waving his gun around saying that they're molesting children and the library is helping them, something like that. And it's like, that's just some, and it's like this 60-year-old man who refused to leave. And there's like a video of all these cops going, sir, you need to leave. Like, they took his gun and walked him outside. That is going to be a problem going forward. There's going to be these people that are the diehards. I mean, I posted that photo prior to the election of the guy rolling around with the giant, it was a converted flatbed trailer with, like, he'd built a prison and put some fucking mannequins inside it with Hillary, Obama, and Bill Clinton masks on them with giant Qs on it. And it was this...
I just realized I'm channeling Robert Vaughn.
Yeah, you're looking very, like, what the fuck? But I this is, like, encountering it in real life.
Yeah.
And...
So, wait, oh, you actually saw this?
This was... I was literally...
This was one of those out-of-town craft things.
This was in Weatherford, and I, like, walked up to his window and said, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he just laughed.
And he didn't shoot you on set?
No.
Okay.
He just moseyed on, but he was also wearing a Trump mask while driving his truck, which I'm sure is super fucking illegal, but he's a white guy, so...
Yeah.
So the QAnon crazies, they're very dangerous and are fun in the abstract way, but in reality are going to be an ongoing problem in our society.
I'm sure someone has looked into this, or historians have probably theorized about this, but I'm really curious how this period in history will be written about 50 or 100 years from now. You know, like... meme culture, QAnon, the weird ways our politics are shifting and stuff like that. Like, how is the early 21st century going to be looked at in a historical context You know, like nowadays, we look back at Prohibition and be like, that was a stupid thing we did 100 years ago, you know? And I'm really wondering, because like, where's the internet going? You know, where's internet culture going? Are we going to keep with the meme thing forever? Or are they just going to keep evolving?
And, I mean, there's always been images like that. It's just now we reach through them, we burn through them so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the moment a brand touches a meme or a joke, it dies instantly and people have to move on to the next one.
Right. And like, I saw that Tumblr post a couple years ago that was like a picture of six badgers, a picture of a mushroom, a picture of a snake. And the first response was, I don't get what these have to do with each other. And someone was like, oh my God, we've reached a point where like the youngest denizens of the net don't know about the earliest memes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and the badger meme wasn't even in the very earliest memes, you know?
I mean, like, Neil Cicierega and his early animutations from the late year 2000, where basically he made these nonsensical flash animations over Japanese Pokemon songs. Like literally songs off the 1996 Pokemon like original ass soundtrack,
right?
Which I literally have a copy of in my drawer right over there.
Uh huh.
Like, and now he's doing weird mashup stuff still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Mouth Moods, that's him.
I think I've heard of that.
If I play a song for you, you'd okay. remember it. I'll show you it after
like,
the show.
It's sort of making me think of like when someone set Pokemon to the mindless self-indulgence song Bitches Love Me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or Everyone Else Has Had More Sex Than Me.
Yeah. And then some early furry artist did a furry version where it's like it's the same little guy except he's a bunny. So he has bunny ears.
Yeah. Or the Reanimator. Like we're showing our internet age.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Badger Badger Mushroom Mushroom or you know
All Your Base
or All Your Base.
That's one of the very earliest ones.
God, when did, like,
I'm think really glad that knowyourmeme.com exists.
Because it can explain some of the dumb shit that's on the internet.
Right. Like, when I see something and I'm like, why is everybody talking about this? And I go over there, and if it's not quite brand spanking new, if it, you know, it's been out for a few days, they usually have something on it. But it's actually a really informative website. It's, I think it's sort of important from an anthropology perspective.
Yeah. All Your Base is from the year 2000.
Wow. I'm actually surprised it didn't have a 19 in front of it. But yeah. 2000, that goes about as far back. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're old.
Wait, the All Your Base meme is old enough to vote?
Yeah. As of last year.
Oh, it's old enough to drink in Canada.
It would vote to move Zig for great justice. But going back to the memes, it's like you have to look at how quickly they evolve. And then, like, how people try to mask their shit as being innocuous, like the learn to code bullshit.
What's learn to code? Is that sort of like get good?
Basically, more recently, there was a bunch of journalists that got laid off. And so.
Oh, I heard the BuzzFeed laid off a whole bunch of people.
Basically, the bullshit pivot to video that was faked by Facebook has hit everybody. And so they didn't hit their projected targets. And so the investors go, oh no.
Which causes real people
to lose their jobs. And investors are not real people.
Like, who the fuck is watching all these videos? Because I'm like, if I'm at the internet, you know, I'm on my phone and I'm either at work, so I'm not watching a video, or I'm on the train, so I'm not watching a video. You know, I rarely wear my headphones.
Yeah.
I mean, and if I'm at work, I'm listening to an audiobook or something, so I might like scroll something that's very light, like Twitter, you know, or skim an article or something like that. Even when I'm at home, like, I don't even have headphones hooked up to my computer. I mean, I have a headset hooked up, but I don't have like speakers, you know?
Yeah.
So I just don't watch videos. So I understand that concept. Like you're delivering the information faster in a visual way. And like, it's probably a lot quicker than reading an article, but like I'll install the autoplay block plugin on Chrome.
Mm-hmm. And stuff I have like that because more often than not, you get this auto playing video of some bullshit. But the reason
I don't know who is watching all of these videos, but
nobody
it's not
is.
Me.
That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
Like
it's an entirely made up thing because investors think that it should be this way. Basically.
Facebook was faking video ad engagements to get more money from the buyers of said ads.
This is my shocked face.
And therefore, all these other companies saw, oh, people aren't reading the articles, but they're getting so much engagement on Facebook.
Behind the Bastards talked about this also.
Yeah.
Part 3.
So all these companies decided, oh, we're going to pivot to video. Laid off a bunch of folks. Then they did video and they found out, oh, wait. No, what's going on? And then it's found out that Facebook was faking all this shit and the actual engagement's like half or less of the actual views. Uh-huh. And they laid off all these people. And then, of course, the only solution for these parasites is, oh, well, we must lay off a bunch more people to maintain our profit to a comfortable margin of 1,000,000,000%. So,
because I know a guy that worked for an internet company, I'm being very vague here, who basically the company, I guess, realized the video, they were not BuzzFeed. The video was not the new hotness. And they had like hired on all these people to do like a whole video department. And then I guess the money hadn't panned out. So they laid off their entire video department, the writers, the presenters, makeup artists, everybody.
Yeah.
Just gone.
And that's kind of what happened with the BuzzFeed stuff is just like, oh no, their profits have fallen. Their profits had risen, but they hadn't risen enough for these parasites.
Oh, and my God.
Basically, so a lot of people lost their jobs. And of course, you have the right-wing dipshits, because it was BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed has posted a bunch of political articles and whatnot.
Right, yeah.
They're a bunch of liberal cucks, quotation fingers. So they
basically, what are they, a bunch of scary...
Scary ghosts.
Scary ghosts.
Okay. Scary ghost skeletons.
Right.
And their coordinated harassment campaign via 4chan and 8chan and all them fun stuff was to just harass people by just saying, we'll learn to code. We'll learn to code. It's no different than just spouting the same thing to a bunch of people, you know, mass spamming pictures of the NPC meme guy. It's just harassment in an abstract form that a normie is not going to understand, but it's still harassment because it's a bunch of assholes on the internet saying the same shit to you.
The other thing is that you know who's doing coding right now? Nigerians for a dollar a day.
Yeah.
And that's not a racist thing. That's like literally watched a show about this, that there's this big chunk of the Nigerian economy that is like, we teach people the basics of a computer and then they code apps for pennies for rich American companies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the new Indian tech support. It's people in Africa learning basic coding skills. So it's like, I'm sorry, learn a code to replace your 60, 80K a year job doing something. It isn't viable.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's outside of the whole thing of maybe I don't want to be a coder. Maybe I don't have the aptitude to be a coder or anything.
I have
like
a journalism
that.
Degree. Fuck you.
Right. Yeah. You know, like learn to code. That's someone saying that who's just completely fucking disconnected from
reality. Just them being dipshits. It's harassing them using a nonsense phrase. Well, I mean, it's not a nonsense phrase, but what they're saying has a specific meaning to them that when viewed in a vacuum says, well, just learn to code. It's like, well, okay, why don't you do that? Because, oh, it's the internet, man. It's so hard to explain this.
It is like get good. It's get good at life.
Yeah.
Is basically what they're saying.
It's like get good scrub.
Right. And it's, except like applied outside of a video game setting, it's even shittier.
Yeah.
Because life doesn't fucking work like that.
Like, we're discussing the evolution of memes and whatever. It's like knowing what's going on is so fucking hard to keep track of. And so you have this random thing fling by your dash and you're like, what the fuck is that? And then it's like, oh, it's yet another Chan thing. God damn it.
Is this a good thing? Is this a lighthearted thing full of uplifting stories?
Or
is it some far right libertarian nightmare fuck? And it's usually the latter.
Yeah. Oh, God, all the anime avatars are at it again. God.
So, news that pissed me off recently.
Okay.
So, you might remember from last year, the Rand Paul's neighbor assaulted him for being a shitty neighbor.
Uh-huh.
He basically tackled him. And, like, Rand Paul was fucking fine. He had some bruises. They only made a big fucking deal of it because he's a sitting senator.
Yeah.
And like, I saw this headline the other day that he won like $550,000 in damages from his neighbor. And I'm really pissed at this ultra libertarian who went through the court system after he got his ass kicked to get money from his neighbor. When I'm like, in your fucking libertarian wet dream, the two of you had a beef, it would be sorted in the Thunderdome and only one of you would leave.
And I mean, if it was the Thunderdome, Rand Paul would have not left.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's going to Canada for a surgery because his glorious American medical care is, I guess, not as good as Canadian socialized medicine.
That particular headline, I have a little issue with it being turned quite that political. I totally agree with you. He's a total fucking dickhead. But apparently he is going to a private clinic. He's not getting a free socialized healthcare treatment. He's going to a private clinic, I guess, because a Canadian doctor might be better than an American doctor at this particular... Ooh, shit, I thought we had the greatest healthcare system in the world. Ooh. So, I mean, it still works, just in a different way.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. People on the left have to be hyper-accurate about their criticisms of right-wing dumbasses because these fucking trolls, like, refuse to believe in facts. So if you get a fact wrong, they will be all over your ass about it. So yeah. Make fun of Rand Paul. Just be factually accurate when you do.
Nice. So, just it's a image of the two Game Grumps guys, which does not include Jontron anymore, so they are okay guys. It's like two types of people holding the knife, smirking at the knife.
Okay, so tell me, so what happened with that? Did they kick him off?
Basically.
Wow. Okay.
They're like, hey, you're kind of a shit.
Which one is Jontron again? Is
the like Hungarian-Iranian dude who hates immigrants.
Okay. What did Markiplier do that was fucked up? Because I thought that was Markiplier.
No.
No, Markiplier.
He's fairly innocuous as far as I know.
Okay, that's right. He's the guy who's the brother of the guy that draws the furry comic, but isn't
two
furry.
Kinds, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Markiplier, he's rather innocuous, though he did put a subscribe to PewDiePie thing on, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That whole thing is an entirely different...
PewDiePie doesn't need his fucking help, honestly. I mean, the guy's still making money hand over fist on YouTube, right? Well, I mean, he's lost a couple of privileges, but he's still got a lot of monetized
rich videos, white boy so. Faces minor consequences. Oh no.
Right. Yeah.
But the other thing is that the competing thing with him is it's literally an Indian music company. It's like no different than like Sony, but it's because
India, for like the top two spots on YouTube.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Like the whole thing about that was literally because an Indian company, because India is teching up really quickly and a lot of people are getting access to the internet. And a lot of people are getting access to internet via their phones.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't know anything about this. So this whole subscribe to PewDiePie thing, that was not because he said something racist and lost a lot of followers.
No.
It's because he's got competition from a different area.
From being the most subscribed to channel on the on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah. That's really silly.
Oh, my God.
But the thing is, like,
gotta keep that white boy on top.
T-Series, the reason they're getting so many followers is because people are finally getting access to the internet en masse in India, which has 1 point something billion people.
Yeah.
So
more than a seventh of the world's population.
Yeah. So basically they're like, oh no, we must do this thing, when it's merely a function of people have access to the internet. Like, the internet is no longer just America and Europe. It's the rest of the world now, too.
Yeah.
And so, like, you mentioned the coders in Nigeria where, like, people had to learn how to use mouse and keyboard because they missed the desktop phase of the internet.
That's right, yeah.
Like, they went from having nothing to phones, and they don't have a point of reference for keyboards and mouse.
Right.
And this is how it is in India. You know, we've got our cheap smartphones made by, you know, they don't get iPhones necessarily over there, but they get the cheap Huawei ones.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own infrastructure for that, and they're getting access to the internet.
Right.
Which means they can watch YouTube. And it literally is just their music industry has a YouTube channel, and a lot of Indian folk who are getting internet access subscribe to that because they want to hear their music.
Right.
It really is that simple.
Wow.
Learning about the internet, the reason internet does stuff is really sad sometimes.
Yeah. See, like, I'd seen the hashtag like once or twice. Like, I had not, it wasn't a big thing on my timeline. And honestly, because I have no interest in the guy, I didn't follow up on it. I just assumed he'd been a dickhead again. Because, I mean, with his history, why wouldn't I think that that was a rational explanation? But, yeah, I didn't know that. It's literally, so this whole hashtag campaign was started because of the threat of competition from non-white people.
And
just wow.
According to, well, I just looked at this right now, and they're dead even at the moment. So he has failed. T-Series is now neck and neck with PewDiePie.
Yeah.
And, well, there's a lot more Indians than there are cracker-ass white boys to subscribe to PewDiePie.
Right.
So, on that uplifting note...
I'm thinking popular music in India, probably a bigger deal than gamers.
Yeah.
Overall. So, anyway, see if there's... I believe, actually, Shiva had dropped a positive thing in the chat a few days ago, which this was after the last episode. It was a, it's a Reddit thread, it's /r humans being bros. There's an app called Be My Eyes that allows blind people to receive help via video chat. So that sounds pretty cool.
You're like, hey, can you read this for me? Sure.
Oh, wow. So here's the current ratio. 112,530 blind people signed up, right? 1,883,663 volunteers. Cool. So clearly they're covered. That is pretty awesome. Yeah, and that was today's ratio as of whenever this was posted. I don't know how the fuck to read things on Reddit, like 9 or 10 days ago, I guess.
Yeah. The thread will be locked. You can no longer add comments, but that's fine. You should never comment on Reddit.
Marcus Noble got a little 13th Dr. Funko.
Oh, that's what that is. He put it in the chat, and I was like, what is that? But yeah. You know what it is.
Yeah, that's Jodie Whittaker. That's the 13th Doctor. See, if you zoom in, so you can see her little rainbow top and her suspenders. Yep.
But it's a Funko Pop, so its head is 90% of its mass.
It doesn't look anything like, you know, the actor playing the Doctor ever does. But yeah.
So yeah, we should probably wrap it up because we are going extra long tonight.
Okay, sure.
You can always find us online at southpawscast@gmail.com. Find us southpawscast@tumblr.com. You can find us on ye iTunes, etc. Southpawscast.
Twitter. At SouthPawsCast. You can Patreon. Always support us at patreon.com/SouthPawsCast.
We appreciate every buck. Also, Pepper Cody could always still use your help, so check him out as well. Just Pepper Cody on Patreon. He did our intro song, and he's a cool guy, so yes. He just had his birthday stream and shaved off all his hair.
You know, I put that as a reminder in my calendar, and like that was one of the days I was sick, so I fucking missed it.
I don't remember what I was doing, but I missed it too.
There's probably a VOD. It's Twitch.
So. The VODs, even if he's not like a affiliate, it stays for like 2 weeks.
And his Twitch TV is Pepper Coyote Paws.
Just check that out. You can find me on Twitter at Savrin Drake. You can find me on Mastodon at snouts.online at Savrin. And find me on Twitch where I'm streaming video games. Right now I am in Kingdom Hearts 2. We'll see how long I stick to it. But I'm going to try to stick to it. You know, because honestly, streaming on Twitch, I don't have a huge audience, but it's a good excuse for me to play some video games I wouldn't otherwise do. And I have a few dedicated chatters that I really appreciate in the audience.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's like they're here to watch me play video games and be chill about it.
Yay! You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. As always, Fuzzwolf is brought to you by ForPlanet.com, where we sell furry books and art collections and comics. Saren, you are doing a thing for your parents this weekend?
Yep, I will be out in Weatherford, Texas for First Monday Trade Days, helping my mom sell stuff.
Then the following weekend, you are dealing at Harmony Con, the local
Pony Con.
Pony convention.
At the Crown Plaza, Dallas. I think it's like Harmony Con. You can Harmony Con Dallas, or just search for Harmony Con Dallas on the Googles and you will find their
relevant. Not going to be that hard to find.
Yeah, yeah. You can find their media. And then the weekend after that,
Savrin and I are doing Con DFW, where we have two tables where I will have a table for my less furry books, but I will still bring some furry stuff in there. So my more mainstream friendly sci-fi stuff. So my Ursula Vernon, my Mary Loud, my Watts Martin, Tim Sussman, and the other table, Savrin will be selling for his parents' company.
Yep.
That'll be fun. I think I'm actually kind of looking forward to just like it's not going to be a high pressure convention us, you know, so a lot of it will be, we'll just be chilling out. But, you know, 3 days out in Fort Worth, you know what? You can fucking show me around if you want, because I've been through Fort Worth. I think I've picked up or dropped you off at your parents' place like once or twice.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years.
We can do some Fort Worth touristy shit.
I haven't really seen any of Fort Worth. And hey, now that my back is a bit better and I can walk worth a shit, you can actually like show me around somewhere. So.
I may just have to do that.
Okay. We'll at least catch a couple of maybe nice dinners or something like that. I mean, you said there's fucking all around the hotel. You know,
but we'll have cars. We'll have
a car. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have both our cars because there's surface parking and it's at a non-pay parking hotel.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have our vehicles and we can go do some touristy shit. I'll take you to the stockyards maybe and we can go see the steers and queers.
Taking me to the stockyard sounds like, it sounds like a fucking spanking kink thing. It sounds like it should be like a euphemism.
There should be a leather bar down there.
Street fair or something.
There really should be a leather bar down there, but there's not.
That should be what the fucking gay neighborhood of Fort Worth is called.
Yeah.
We're going to go down to the stockyards and I'm going to get my dick sucked.
Yeah. No. All right, y'all. So we are going to wrap it up for this week. You can find us at all our places. Check the show notes for the links. And good night.
And buy books.